Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Stella Blue Coffee is more than just great coffee. It's coffee with a purpose. Introducing We Brew to Rescue, a nationwide campaign using proceeds from our new ready-to-drink cans to help fund 1,000 pet adoptions this year. Every can you crack open helps a real pet find a real home. Simple as that. Made with 100% Colombian coffee, each 11-ounce can delivers smooth, drinkable energy with a boost of protein. Available in espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. Built for mornings, long days, and everything in between. Drink Stella Blue, fuel your day, and help save a pet's life. You can follow our progress in real time throughout the campaign by watching the adoption tracker on our site. Grab yours now at StellaBlueCoffee.com, Amazon, and select retailers nationwide.
Trust no one and accuse everyone. And Who's the Bad Guy? The official Barstool Sports social deduction game from the brilliant mind of Nick Tirrani. In what's quickly becoming the most popular new party game around, players are secretly assigned unique roles, with the good guys trying to expose the bad guys and the bad guys doing everything they can to stay hidden. Each game unfolds under alternating day and night phases, with roles like the cool chick, the shy guy, the gambler, El Presidente, the mentalist, the planner, the funny guy, and more. Every round is unpredictable, chaotic, and ridiculously fun. Who's the Bad Guy is great for parties, pre-games, family gatherings, or groups who just love deception-based games. Game night will never be the same. Shop now on Walmart.com.
On this episode of Project Big Screen, we have two massive reviews of two wildly different movies. The drama starring Zendaya and Robert Pattinson, and then the Super Mario Galaxy movie. Then afterwards, stick around to see part one of our top 50 movies of the century. 25 years of movies. What belongs in the top 50? Well, stick around and find out. You will not want to miss some of these picks. All right, on to the show.
All right, episode 27 of Project Big Screen. Jeff D'Lo, Ken Jack, Kirk, Clemmer, Gooch. Apologies off the top, I sound fucking terrible. Lost my voice at the Final Four last night in Indianapolis, and I'm recording in a co-work, and there's somebody recording a comic book movie podcast right across the way. Oh, I should have him on, see what he thinks. We have a fun one today. We have The Drama and Super Mario Galaxy. This could be five people who saw the same two movies. There might be only five people in the world that saw those two movies in the same, like, two-day span. Two very different movies. And then we are finally doing our top 50 movies of the century so far. That is 2000 through 2025. We are counting the year 2000. I know purists said the millennium started 2001, but for the sake of, you know, things looking even and nice, we're counting 2000. But we'll get to that later on. So we're going to do 10 a week for 5 weeks. Very, very excited to see how this plays out. We'll get to that in a minute. First up, Super Mario Galaxy. We'll talk about the one that's probably a little easier to get through than the drama. Probably not as much to say on this one, but huge.
Same plot twist, though, which was surprising to me. I did not expect that. That shocked me.
Mario, I can't believe Princess Peach thought about doing that.
Don't go to school tomorrow.
Spoiler alert, but Mario kills Luigi in the third act. It is unbelievable. Having thwarted Bowser, this is one of the longest synopses I've ever seen. It is for Mario Galaxy. Having thwarted Bowser's previous plot to marry Princess Peach, Mario and Luigi now face a fresh threat in Bowser Jr., who's determined to liberate his father from captivity and restore the family legacy alongside companions new and old. The brothers travel across the stars to stop the young heir's crusade. Hour and 38 minutes long, which is about an hour longer than the first one. One of the shortest movies I've ever seen in a theater. Same people who directed the last one, they also directed Teen Titans Go to the Movies. Aaron Horvath, Michael Jelenic. Chris Pratt back as Mario, or Mario as some people say it. Anya Taylor, Ken Jack being one of them, Long Islanders. Mario. Anya Taylor-Joy, Charlie Day, Jack Black, Keegan-Michael Key, Benny Safdie plays Bowser Jr. Donald Glover voices Yoshi. Brie Larson in this one. A bunch of other cameos. They spoiled a huge cameo intentionally. for marketing purposes, which I think was odd because I don't think they needed to. This was going to make a shitload of money anyway. But we'll get to that character in a minute if you haven't seen who that is. We won't spoil that. Projected to make $188 million domestic opening. This is going to be one of the biggest movies of the year. This movie's going to make so much fucking money. That place was slammed. And before I give the review, it is... Mario's always been popular, right? Like, that's not, like, a surprising thing. But it is kind of crazy. They just made, like, Mario. Because, like, little kids who, like, are now, like, massive Mario fans because of these movies. It is kind of fascinating to see. And not because of the games, because of the movies. They are because of the games as well. But, like, it's crazy to see that, how it's all played out. 41%, 89% split Rotten Tomatoes, as expected. 6.5 IMDb. Metacritic, 35. And then Letterboxd. 3.0. Kirk. Oh, Super Mario Galaxy. I know you were dialed the fuck in for this one. Would
I'm the worst person to go first in this. I'll get out of the way and let people who know. I've never played it. I'm too old. I don't understand anything that's going on the entire time. I feel weird being there. Like, I don't know what's going on. Like, I'm just the whole time kind of like, I was just thinking about the Masters a lot during it. I mean, it looked good, and the friggin' place was the movie theater, you know, Clemmer, Mr. Doomsday every year, the movies are dead. Movie theater was, the theater was jammed with kids running around all over the place. I grabbed two kids and we went to see the drama after. They love that. I get why. So in my limited knowledge of what's going on, if I did a Mario Galaxy, like if that was a trivia category, I would get a 0 out of 100. It seemed like other people were also kind of confused what was going on. It seemed like it was not a great story, but like, I don't know, the kids were going friggin' insane. Like they had a great time. It's a huge success. I guess the reason why they waited so long to make them, if I had to guess, was they did it so poorly. Was it 30 years ago? Was that the Hoskins one?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was that right? So maybe they were, a gunshot, I guess maybe. But I mean, like, just get ready. Like, there's going to be like three of these in some form or fashion a year for like the next 12 years or something. So, I mean, I want to just give it an incomplete because I didn't know what was going on, but I'll give it a 42. It's better than Hamnet.
That's the baseline all year.
Yeah. Yep. Better than Hamnet, I would say. I don't know. But I get why like 8-year-olds are going bananas. I think I will say, I thought it looked good. I think
it looks fantastic.
Yeah, it looks great. Good. So there you go.
Ken Jack of Ken, a Mario pronouncer. What do you think of Super Mario Galaxy movie?
But by the way, Kirk, there is Mario Golf, which you might enjoy.
Oh, is that right?
True.
Fantastic
true.
Game. Yeah.
Oh, is that right? Oh, okay.
Yeah, you might enjoy that game quite a bit. I'd qualify it by saying, like, I was pleasantly surprised by the first one, which I think most of us were. Like, we kind of expected to be sort of a pseudo disaster kids, like slop movie, whatever. And so the expectations were low, but they, I think, exceeded them, had a serviceable plot, nice animation, like you were just saying, and like the baseline level of heart that a big IP adaptation, I think, like this needs to be like considered a real movie. I don't think this really has any of that. I don't even know if I could say there was a plot. It was more of like a compilation, like YouTube video of scenes. And it was like the equivalent of watching like a 5-year-old speed running YouTube shorts on an iPad. Like, that's what I felt like watching this movie. Like, it's just like, here's disconnected things happening, flashing in front of your face. That's all I have to offer you. So I think, like, if the idea is to make a movie that satisfies a kid's attention deficit disorder for an hour and a half, success. But to me, it's just like, it wasn't really like a movie. So I gave it a 40. I like 25 of those points are for the fact that, like, I think it should satisfy a kid's attention for an hour and a half. I don't think it was built at all for an adult, and that's fine, but it just, I did not enjoy it.
Clemmer, what did you give it?
So I kind of liked the first one. It hit all the nostalgia points for me. I thought it looked great. I'd probably give the first one like a 62. So it was pretty good, pretty enjoyable. This one, this is where my nostalgia ran out. I never played Super Mario Galaxy, so kind of like Kirk, I was kind of confused. I don't know Rosalina. Like, I don't care about Rosalina. And if there's no nostalgia, like Ken Jack was saying, there's no story, then there's like nothing here. It does look fantastic, and I like some of those action sequences where it feels like you're kind of playing the game. Like, that's done really well. It's done really well in the first one too. But there's just nothing here, and I just don't care about seeing characters on screen that I really had very little familiarity with the video game. So for me, I'm out of 40. I will say, after it was over, my theater was excited. Some people were giving a standing ovation. Some people were really loving the movie. So, I mean, I don't know.
Standing ovation?
What? Some people gave a standing ovation in my theater.
Like, they stood standing for that post-credit? They stood standing for that massive post-credit scene?
No. At the end, they sat down and they waited for both the post-credit scenes. They were very excited.
Both?
Both. There's two.
Daryl,
you missed out.
I was gonzo. I did not see those. Is that Glenn Powell or something, or no?
Yes. He's in one of them, and the other one is that monkey comes back.
Oh, good, good, good. That's good.
That thieving monkey comes back.
Gooch, what did you give it?
I'm at a 35, and this movie is truly carried by the animation department. Like, hats off to the animation department, because they are basically the saving grace for everything going on here, which is not much. Kenjack, you kind of nailed what I was going to say in terms of, like, there's just really no plot here. It feels like if you've played Super Smash Brothers, they play like this like 5-minute intro with like all the characters coming on screen and just kind of doing their thing, but there's not like a story behind it. That's what this felt like, stretched out to 100 minutes. Like, it's just a bunch of like, look at this character. Look at this character in this costume. Look at this discontinued line. And a lot of this stuff, I don't even think big Nintendo or Mario fans are picking up on it. Like, there's just a lot of references to stuff that people don't know about. Like, when it comes to Nintendo, you know Mario, but do you really know, like, does anyone really know the lore? Like, Justin does, I guess, but that's Justin.
Yeah.
No, I feel like 99% of the audience
can't wait to hear
your
score.
Aren't going to get these references. And it also feels like, it feels like the DCEU, the Snyder version a little bit, that first Justice League to me, where it's like they are just really trying to get to a cinematic universe as fucking fast as they can. And as we saw with that, that doesn't really work, because you need a little bit of an emotional stake in these characters. You need to have something there. And this doesn't give that at all. So 35 out of 100. Hopefully they can get this back on track, because I did like the first one, and I do think there is space for children's movies, like really directed at children, but they deserve better than this.
Yeah, I give it a 45. I gave the first one a 69. I enjoyed the first one, and as much as I joke about how short that movie was, I do think that was a fairly good thing for what the first, and obviously this one, I mean, to be fair, this one's not... this one's not much longer than the other one, but like, it did feel a little tighter. It kind of just felt like they were kind of hitting their things. For this one, you're right, it feels like they're kind of jamming a few extra things in here and trying to do more, when I don't even think that was necessary. And it just kind of all fell a little flat for me. As great as it looked, it just like overstuffing and overcomplicating it. It kind of like, eh. Now, there's a little bit of me that wants to give it some grace, and I call this the Godzilla vs. Kong metric, where Godzilla vs. Kong I liked, but Godzilla vs. Kong never was going to be better than what I gave it, which was like, I think it was like a 70. Like, that movie was built to be a 700, and this movie, I think, is built to be like a, at best, like 60, for kids to look at and enjoy and have fun with and love all the characters. And I think that's why it exists. I'm not saying that as a defense of like, that's why this is art in cinema. You should respect it more than you are. I think it's pretty clear what this is and what they tried to do. And I don't want to get too like old man fucking yelling at clouds about Mario. But I think the thing for me is, it's, you can go a little harder on this because I do think the first one was just better. So it's like, the barometer is like, there is a bar from the first one, and they just went under the bar, which is a bummer, because I think what Gooch said, the animation is fucking fantastic in this movie. It looks great. It looks incredible. I give it a 45. I think it's enjoyable for kids. I think they're going to have a good time with it. They're going to watch it over and over and over again. There's the Mario toys in the fucking store and everything. I mean, it's crazy how big this is, and it's... We'll spoil now. So spoiler alert now. They are going to just keep jamming fucking Super Smash Brothers. Pikachu's going to be in this shit one day, probably, if they can make that work. You have Star Fox's movie voiced by Glenn Powell, which was weird that... I found it weird that they promoted it. Because I get it. Like, you're trying to get people in, but like they didn't need that for this. Like, why not leave a couple surprises, you know, once you walk into the theater? But obviously that signals what they're going to do. They're going to cross over so many fucking properties, and this is going to go on, as Kirk said, forever. Ugh. Just forever.
And also, outside of like Jack Black, do any of these celebrity voices make any kind of impact on the box office?
Those kids running around don't care that Glenn Powell is doing that.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Jack Black, I think is it at this point, right?
Yeah, for kids. Yeah. Kids are only
nobody,
gonna
like end. Kids don't like nobody cares. Donald Glover's Yoshi. It's going to this like
the 6 year old next to me turned to his 5 year old friend and said, "Is that Childish Gambino voicing Yoshi?"
Yeah, that's what I mean, isn't it?
Holy shit!
I think you're gonna get a Star Fox movie. I don't know if you guys ever played that, like for the Super Nintendo.
Love
that
Star almost, Fox. Great game.
That almost like could be a movie. It's like Top Gun with animals, but like it could be like in space. But like you can make that a movie, I think, pretty easily.
Chris saw a animated movie about a fox, and his ears perked up. He was like, "Get me in that door." Mm-hmm. Nothing Chris loves more than an animated movie about an animal. Isn't that right?
I do want
pout, pout fish.
Pout fish. We got to talk about the. I missed the pout fish talk last week. Animal.
Unbelievable.
I want to get so Justin. We haven't heard on here in a while.
Justin, you up? Here we go.
Hello.
Josh, is he sleeping?
No. He's got a lot on his plate right now, so yeah.
True.
Yeah.
Hello.
True.
You up?
I want to hear a take from someone who maybe liked it a little more, that is like a huge Mario person. What did Justin think?
It was fine. It was just like I think the YouTube short analogy was pretty spot on. But like you don't play Mario for the plot.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need a great plot. We just want to do cool things.
Yeah. The thing that interests me though is that they've jammed so many like big things. Like, remember they did a Mario Kart scene in the last one, right?
Yep.
It's one of those ones where it's like, man, it's like, I don't know if you wanna do you really want to burn all your shit? So like, I don't know, like maybe scale it back a bit. You have so much stuff. Like, don't just get it in to get it in there. And like maybe kind of have it mapped out a little more, maybe have it play out in a more enjoyable, like don't just jam it in because you want to get these in these movies and make money. I don't know, maybe make it play out a little longer. And
but I think this movie,
waiting game,
this movie was made to be like watched like 3 times in a row by like 8-year-olds, so like yeah. Oh, you like
for sure
they're gonna find out things like every like new things they watch. You're gonna like adults aren't gonna watch this ever again. It's like one of those stupid movies that like 7-year-olds will be like, I watched Super Mario Galaxy 3 times in a row every Saturday. So it's just
that can't be good for their brains. That cannot be good for their brains at all.
What do you give this movie, like, Justin?
65.
Oh.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I mean, look, I don't think we need to sit here in soapbox about fucking Super Mario Galaxy much longer. Just kind of want to give our thoughts. If you're someone who, you know, I think if you have kids, take them to this movie, fun movie. I like that it's an older property. You know, again, that's some too old man yelling at clouds. Like, that is kind of fun seeing Mario as popular as it is right now. Shout out to Chris Pratt as Mario too. We have an old viral tweet that we made of what Chris Pratt sounded like, and it was that fake Italian guy on Twitter. So it feels like it's been decades since that first happened, and now we have two movies, and this movie's going to make a godsum money. It's going to make so much fucking money. This will be right up there. Probably top five of the year, do we think? This ends up?
Easily. It could be number one. Definitely. Very easily.
I do think that the number one is off the board now. I don't think it's good enough to get there. I think, you know what I mean?
I don't know if it matters. I know what you mean. I think it's
ranking a good.
I think parents will put their foot down at some point and stop with the multiple repeat viewings because they can't sit through this one again.
$372.5 million worldwide.
Jesus Christ,
Lord,
that's fucking crazy.
Okay, maybe it will.
It's gonna get to a billion, that's for sure.
That's crazy. Yeah. You know what? Good. March, $1 billion movie.
Oh yeah, who cares? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
That and Project Hail Mary.
And again, I will say too, this is I as much as we didn't like love it. Love seeing great animation like that. They have their own kind of style that works. It looks good.
That hand puppet thing they did was awesome when they were doing the puppet show. And I think they were using a real hand blended in with like a real sock puppet on a hand blended into the animated scene. It was so cool.
Hmm. Yeah, it's look, again, if you're a big Mario fan, go have fun, whatever. If you have kids, definitely take them. But I think we'll set the expectations. If you're an adult only going to this and expecting, you know, fucking Spider-Verse, temper your expectations. So yeah, that's Super Mario Galaxy. We're all kind of in the range of 30s to 50s, in between that kind of number range for our. Hey LCB listeners, we're going to take a quick break for a message from one of our partners.
Mein Name ist Alexandra und ich habe GoFundMe genutzt, indem ich einen Spendenaufruf darüber gemacht habe für eine Familie. Ich wohne in der Innenstadt von Leipzig und es hat bei uns einen ganz, ganz schlimmen Brand gegeben, Wohnungsbrand, der sich über mehrere Etagen tatsächlich ausbreitete. Wir sind so ein Mehrfamilienblock und mein Freund war derjenige, der gesagt hat, ey, guck mal, hier gibt's ein Portal. GoFundMe heißt das, dann mir angeschaut und das war dann der Startpunkt. Also was ich jetzt natürlich erreichen konnte, die Familie hat jetzt erstmal eine Notunterkunft. Die haben vorher wirklich auch in einem Hotel-Hostel gelebt, sind jetzt seit der letzten Woche in einer ja, vorübergehenden Wohnung, haben jetzt aber die Chance gehabt, wirklich Kinderzimmer zu kaufen.
Starte deinen Spendenaufruf noch heute. In nur wenigen Minuten auf GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com für deinen Spendenaufruf. Dies ist eine bezahlte Anzeige von GoFundMe.
All right, now back to the episode. For the drama, talk about what a movie this is. Holy shit. I'll say this before we give our review. I wanted to see it again this weekend because I was like, I don't think I can properly talk about this until I see it again or like read. Like, it's one of those ones where you just kind of leave the theater like, what the fuck? Obviously, we're not going to spoil anything in it, but we'll give our spoiler-free review initially and then get into it because this is one of those movies where I would suggest, honestly, right now, I don't think I can speak for everyone in saying, go check this out, right? Like, I think we can, I won't say scores, but I think if you want to see this movie, I think if that's 5, go check this out, stop listening. Like, just don't listen. Come back and listen after you see it. Because I think this is a movie that it's best to know almost nothing. And the trailers did a very good job of that. Yep. Trailers kind of set you up. They never spoil this. You know, Project Hail Mary, they're showing the fucking rock. It's just like, it's unbelievable.
And the A24 promotion for it, too. Not just but the way they promoted the movie, I thought it was pretty smart. Yep. Yeah.
So here's the short synopsis. A happily engaged couple is put to the test when an unexpected turn sends their wedding week off the rails. That is underselling it, but that is what happens. The main people in this is Zendaya, Robert Pattinson, Mamadou Afi, is how you say his name? Alana Haim, who's been in, I feel like, everything lately. So that's the main cast. It's a big Zendaya, Robert Pattinson thing. You've seen them promoting this for a while now. Zendaya has a humongous year right now. For her, from fucking Spider-Man to Dune, Odyssey, crazy year for Zendaya.
And Pattinson. And they're right there with her.
It continues here with this.
Yeah.
Euphoria. What did you give it, Kirk? What did you think about, spoiler-free here, the drama?
Spoiler-free? Okay.
Spoiler-free right now. Just off the top. We'll make this part quick because, again, okay. I don't think you can say too much about it.
Well, last week when you weren't here, I don't even remember the names of the movies we reviewed last week, the two boring movies. But I think it was Gooch at one point, because I was like, they're both like 50s. And Gooch said, isn't that the worst? It's the worst, which is true. It's the worst. Like, give me a 12 or give me a 90. Mm-hmm. And you got one here. Like, this is going to be, I think, the most divisive movie of 2026. Probably, was Eddington last year? Is that right?
Probably, yeah.
That's probably the one I would say last year, right? If you wanted to say, you know. I'm going to give it, I've thought about it a lot since seeing it yesterday, a lot. And I'm going to give it a 90.
Wow. Wow. Big score.
It's a big swing. It pays off. It's funny. She's a huge star and you know, is going to have a great career. And I give her credit because she essentially is playing sort of a quiet character and a supporting character in this movie. Like, she really is. Like, this is a Pattinson movie all the way. And for her to do that, I think, and sort of be also the most likable character in the movie as well. The movie has obviously, it's hard to do without the spoilers. So I'll just say it's a big swing. It pays off. The twist to me pays off in a bunch of different ways, which I guess we can get into conversationally after. And then it goes in tonal shifts that could absolutely not have worked winds up working. I think in each part, is a, sort of a different tonal aspect to it. And even the last third, which kind of gets wacky to me, still works. So to me right now, the more I think about it, the higher I go with it. And I'm at 90 right now. It's my favorite movie of the year so far by a good margin.
90. We'll see if we get some other big scores here. Ken Jack, what'd you give it?
Yeah, I'm right there with Kirk. I'm at an 87. I really like this movie. I think it's like a relatively like general concept, right? As far as like, what if the person you love isn't who they think they are, you think they are, right? Like, that's a pretty we've seen that in a lot of movies before. But I love taking that idea, making like the thing what it is, and then just having these two really good actors like battle out opposing mental breakdowns. I think that was a really cool idea. It worked. It's sometimes cringy, sometimes dramatic, sometimes like, and I think you should leave skit. Like the DJ, holy shit, brought, I was dying laughing at that DJ. And I just enjoyed the hell out of it. And on top of that, I think shot really well. Love the music choices. I think the entire cast top to bottom was fantastic. I think this is like, you mentioned Alana Haim. I think this is my favorite Alana Haim role I've ever seen. I think she was, I hated this woman.
Yeah.
I hated this person. So like evoked such rage. I loved it. It was such a good performance. And so many great scenes throughout it. I really enjoyed it. And when I look at there, some of the other reviews people have for it, I'm like, did you watch the same movie? Like this was, I had so much fun with it. Enjoyed it a lot. But yeah, we'll talk more once we get into spoilers. So 87 out of 100 for me.
Clemmer, what'd you give it?
Yeah, I'm at an 85. I love this too. This is fantastic performances by Pattinson and Zendaya. Or Zendaya, excuse me. She acts with her eyes. Like she doesn't say a ton in this movie. She like Kirk's a kind of a quiet character, but you can like see how she's feeling. She, like just looking at her, she's such a good actress. Alana Haim, an awesome performance. And I liked how this was edited. Like it kept moving. It was a great pace to it. Never got bogged down. And it like Kirk said, like. You leave the theater and you're like thinking about it. I saw it on Friday and I'm like still thinking about it like 2 days later, like quite a bit, like a lot to chew on. And just really, if you're looking for a dark comedy drama, like this is a can't miss.
Mm-hmm. Gooch score.
Yeah. Run it back to back 85. Just fantastic control of tone, like really impressive stuff because we'll talk about it in a second. Very dark subject matter, not only at the twist, but there's a lot of stuff going on here that's just very dark to navigate, but it does so without really being bogged down in like the movie only being about that one thing, and then also keeping its comedic edge like throughout. This was a lot funnier than I was expecting. I was expecting romantic drama, really straight drama, obviously the title. I was not expecting the comedic elements in this, and it was really funny when it needed to be. The performance is great. I think this is Zendaya's best performance of her career. Like, kind of not close. And I've been critical of her in the past as a performer. I think she's a great movie star. But this was really great acting. And Robert Pattinson also is just carved out a lane here as, like, the weird, squirrely guy. He's so good at it. Alana Haim, I think she's great in everything. She's also really great. She just always on screen feels like a real person. Like, a very tangible human being. And she's very tangible here as someone that, you know, who just like fucks up the friend group all the time. And yeah, she nailed that. So I'm at an 85 out of 100. Can't wait to talk more about it. Been thinking about it. Great, great movie for adults.
Yeah, I'm actually the highest. I'm a 91. I thought this was pretty fantastic stuff. Again, we'll get into the nitty gritty in a second, but this isn't really giving much away. It's an uncomfortable movie that they managed to make dark, but also funny. And the writing is so impressive in this to be able to like weave that together and not make it like kind of cringing in your seat to a point where you're like, this sucks. It's just impressive shit. Like the fact that they were able to do that with this movie, is pretty impressive because so often I think with like, dark comedies and like dark humor and shit, if you try to weave in like a really, really intense storyline, it can make it so grating that it just doesn't flow. This never has that problem. Like once it gets into it, you're always tense, you're always on the edge of your seat, but you're also kind of laughing. You feel they just find the sweet spot with this, and it's very impressively written, obviously very well acted as well. That kind of goes without saying. Like, I don't want to diminish the acting because that's a big part of it. But, like, they're just so good typically. I'm, like, not surprised that they're as good in this as they are. But, yeah, the writing and the story development in this is I was kind of blown away by it. Because I'm like, this probably shouldn't work. It's dark. It's fucked up. But then it's also really funny. And it throws you for a loop in so many different ways. Keeps you guessing. So, yeah, one of the producers of the movie was Ari Aster.
Yeah,
kind of says it all. Like anyone sick enough that Ari Aster works with probably, you know, makes sense. Christopher Borgli, I believe is how you say his name, the director. He also wrote the movie. Great stuff from him. He's done Sick of Myself and Dream Scenario, or his other movies. I just go see this movie, man. This is a fun, you know. And if you hate, like Kirk said, if you hate it, I totally get it. Like,
well, I get that. I mean, I do and I don't, but yeah, I understand.
There's some people, right? Like, I love Uncut Gems, but I get why people don't like it because they think it's an uncut, like, whatever. Like, if this is too much for people, like, I totally get it. But that's the thing that I like the most. They fucking swung for it. And the thing, if I'm going to pick one thing out of anything, non spoiler, that I truly commend them, I like the writing, I commend a lot. It's the fact that they took a swing, but they committed to it, right? How often do you see a movie commit or try to take a swing at something and they don't commit the rest of the way? I kind of expect that to happen. I'm like, man, they're going for it. At what point are they going to stop going for it and play it safe to land the plane? And they never do. They never do at any point in this movie. They fucking go for it from the start and they go for it all the way to the end. So, yeah, credit to them, the drama. This was, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know. I didn't have it spoiled for me. So I had no idea going in. So if you've not seen it, now I'm really telling you to turn this off. Turn this off. Skip ahead. There's time codes below. Skip to the news section. You don't want this spoiled. Pausing. Okay. If you're still listening and it gets spoiled, that's on you. Here's the kind of big twist, if you're listening and you don't know it, is the two characters, Pattinson and Zendaya's character, meet. They have kind of like a meet cute. And part of it is she can't hear. When they're meeting, and we find out later on when they have this very dramatic dinner scene where they're talking about the worst things they've done in their life, that Zendaya's character blew out her eardrum while practicing shooting to what she had planned on being masculinity, school shooting.
Yeah.
Which is just like, I was like, what the fuck? I actually looked around in my theater because I was alone. I was like, is anyone else can anyone talk to me about this for a second? Like, this is insane. And then it just fucking crumbles from there, and at every turn you're like, oh, the worst thing of all time is about to happen. And there's characters who have relationships in their lives, people who've been in like mass shootings. It all unravels, and it's just right. it's insane.
Keep in mind she didn't do anything. Her worst story is she didn't do anything.
Yeah, right,
which is, you know, a lot of times her is worse.
Way worse.
Like,
way
much, worse. So much worse. which is great. First of all, Pattinson and Zendaya meet in a lie, which is interesting too. Yes. Like, he lies. Like, he hadn't read the book. Remember, they meet cute. She can't hear him. He takes a picture. So that's an interesting thing too. And they're at this dinner, like you're saying, Jeff, and it's this wedding preparation dinner. It's a funny movie about wedding planning too. All these, which features, I think, the hardest I've laughed in the movie theater in a long time is that scene with the wedding photographer after.
Zoe
like,
Winters.
Like, yeah, a guy was like fucking howling. But you're right. And to me, I think I've reacted the way some people have, which is like, obviously it's a horrible thing, but she didn't do it.
Yeah.
So why is everybody acting so crazy about it? But it's really examination of them. These are self-involved. These are, you know, which is good. These are not good people, kind of, except for her in a way. Like, it's an interesting. It's just very smart.
She didn't go through with it because there was another event in her town that kind of led her to, again, not go through with it, kind of change what she thought, kind of viewed things. The dog, a lot of Hayden's character locked a mentally disabled person.
In a shack and was never going to act
in the woods.
Abandoned. Yeah, yeah.
And slept on it all night. And the father comes back and said, have you seen my son? And she said, no. That's so fucked up. Like, you had a whole night to think about this.
She's just outraged because her cousin, which is another actually very funny scene later in the movie.
Yes.
Her cousin is in a wheelchair from a mass shooting, right? Isn't that?
Yes, that was like the relationship kind of,
What was Pads? Like, is he cyberbullied somebody or something?
Yeah, cyberbullied kid out of town, left town.
Like, they have nothing. The other
guy, he used a dog or used his girlfriend as like a human shield versus a human shield.
I thought was, when watching it, think about it more and more, I'm like, that story from that guy, Alana Haim's husband, is not that, it's like not that bad. Why did she want to tell that story? Like, what, did she just want to unburden her story? Like, or was it just, they were just drunk and fucking around? Or because it was, there was nothing.
She didn't seem that sad about her story. She's like, oh, he's fine. Like, she didn't seem too distraught about her story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I don't know why she wanted to, unless she's just like a negative person wanted to like blow shit up.
That's right. What I think is so good about and genius about that character is that person exists, like this I'm better than everybody performative coworker lady. Like, that lady is so real and tangible, and like, man, that was just such a great, perfectly written character, designed character, and just perfectly acted by Alana Haim, which I'm glad you pointed that out, Clemmer. Just the realest human being. I think it was you or Zach Gugic. Sorry.
She was great. Yeah.
It's remarkable how little empathy people have. Like, so like, a 15-year-old kid moved to a new town. She's obviously like teenagers. Everything is like life or death because they have no life experiences, and because of that, she was obviously in a dark place and had these horrible thoughts. She didn't go through with it, but no one is willing to give her that like that understanding. Everyone
sounds like
is just so
like projecting.
Clever.
I don't know.
What's that?
Sounds like you're projecting a little bit. I don't know.
No, we didn't have school shootings when I was a kid.
Those were the days. Those are the days.
But you feel like, all right, like, kids do stupid shit, but like, no one's willing to give her that grace, though. Everyone is just like affronted and like, and acts so overreactionary.
And if you watch that scene too, before she gives her a confession, they're talking about, I think they're talking about Pattinson, I forget. And Alana Haim says, well, the human brain isn't formed till you're 25 anyway. She's forgiving somebody for that, but like, she just loses it, and it becomes this sort of this crazy. The next 40 minutes is just like nuts. And it could have, I was thinking, could have easily been in different hands. I mean, Mike Myers almost made a movie like this. Like, you know, in different hands, this could have been like a Vince Vaughn like romantic comedy from 2006. My girlfriend's like a killer or something like that. Or it could have very easily been a Woody Allen movie, you know. But this was handled so. I feel like there's not a false note other than, I'm not sure she would have actually gone to the wedding and been her maid of honor. I'm not sure she would have gone through with that. But other than that, there's like not really a false note, I don't think.
Mm. You know what I like too? And I think this is a good little touch on it, or a little added thing onto it. Like, everyone always wants to forgive people for whatever fucked up ideas or things they have. And like, Robert Pattinson is begging Zendaya to be like, you were traumatized by your friend dying, right? That is why this is happening. She's like, no. No, not really. And then he's using that as an excuse later. Like, I love that. Such a great little subtle note that I really enjoyed as well.
I think the maid of honor does go to the wedding, Kirk, because the maid of honor's like husband is like the guy is Pattinson's best friend. So you can see a world where that best friend drags.
It's a good speech in the dad speech is good. And when the DJ, who's funny, when that thing backfires and then you're just like,
oh my God,
Jesus Christ, like what am I watching? Like, what is this?
That DJ being like, you guys are gearheads, like talking about this setup. Oh my God. I was dying laughing. So
fucking funny. I also really loved the, because it does get a little artsy at points, which I'm surprised audiences have been on board with, like, kind of how out there it gets with the dream sequences. Like, the dream sequence editing, not only, like, when he's asleep and having these nightmares about her and the wedding being shot up, but also just, like, when they're mid-conversation and Zendaya's, like, she's fantasizing about Robert coming over to the couch and just consoling her. And then it cuts immediately back to the conversation and they're still 6 feet apart. Like, all those little moments I thought were just brilliantly done in terms of, like, a filmmaking perspective. Like, really great stuff.
I have a nitpick. I don't know if Pattinson kisses his coworker.
No, I get that.
Yeah, that was the goofiest thing, I think, for sure.
He was having a mental breakdown, though.
The payoff was great, too, I think, for the wedding, so I didn't mind it.
Audiences are not as split on this as I thought they'd be. There are some definitely bad reviews, I think, but I don't know if it got review bombed because of pro Zendaya, but I know it's a higher audience split than critics on Rotten Tomatoes, which I was a little surprised by, because I figured this would be like an 80, like 50. And it's like 77, 81.
It got a B CinemaScore, I think.
Yeah, which is not great.
Which makes sense. Makes sense for something like this. And I think when you make a movie like this, you expect that. It's like, you know what you're fucking doing. But man, this is go see this shit. Mm-hmm. If you've listened to this whole thing and you haven't seen it, that's insane. But still go see it, because it is, we talked about how funny it is, but like, you got to experience the funny stuff and how it weaves in with like the really uncomfortable. This is like right up my alley. Like, I love the uncut gems of the world. I love stuff that makes me uncomfortable. I love, and I know people hate this word in movies, but experience. Like, I like to experience it and feel that, like, oh man, like squirming in my seat. So this was great. I don't think I thought it was gonna be bad, but I was like, I don't know if I'm gonna like this one. Like, I didn't have high expectations on it.
I didn't either.
I was getting materialist vibes, because it's in that same slot and they've kind of run the same playbook in terms of marketing. I was like, this could be good, but I'm setting the cap at a materialist.
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
And it's just a lot better than that. Like, just a lot better.
I put this in our chat, I think, recently, but and maybe you guys would notice it more. I thought this was shot like a New York City movie. I thought it was New York City the entire time.
Yeah, it has no Boston feel to it.
No.
I kind of like that.
Yeah, it's sort of
just feels like any city.
Yeah, which is fine. I saw Justin
walking into Dunkin' Donuts in the background of the scene.
That was
what you're talking about.
That guy in the background.
I will say there's been a lot of that, and I saw the New Yorker critic and a bunch of people have sort of turned this into why are white directors using Zendaya as this thing? And it's just like, first of all, you're not giving her, you say that, but then you're not giving her, she's an adult. She's choosing these films. Like, she is choosing, you know, interesting different projects, and that is just fucking annoying. That's like, it gives me discourse every time about everything. She's an interesting actress. She's a very smart person. Takes her career really seriously, and she's doing good roles. You know, I don't know. I agree. I think it's her best performance. I thought in The Challenger, she seemed like she was playing dress up to me at times as an adult. She felt like an adult in this movie for the first time to me. And she's excellent at it.
Yeah, her career trajectory is kind of fascinating, and she's in all these massive, massive things. And I didn't know what to make of her, I think, early on, and like what she could become. And I think she's found herself in spots where I would expect a couple Oscar nominations probably in her near future. Like, I think it's like, that's the trajectory she's on. She's an impressive stuff. She takes, I think, good roles, different things, mixes it up. You know, doesn't have to be like, you know, I won't be in these comp, like, she can be in a big blockbuster like a Dune, right? With like a really prestige, like a now, I guess, modern prestige director. She could be in Spider-Man and Avengers, right? But then she could be in the drama or Challengers. And it's like, it's impressive. It's, and he's great too. I don't want to take anything away from Pattinson, but for her, she just, I don't know, there's something about her that I was like, I was sold on her already, but this like really just pushed it over kind of another level. We're like, oh, she's got like the goods here. And I think she's taking up a little bit of a break after this year.
What she says,
she's doing the guy. Okay. She's
probably smart
stuff. Yeah, she got Shrek, and then I think she's going to be gone for a while.
That's right. Yeah.
Gooch, you mentioned Materialist. That the wedding photographer is also in Materialist.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
She's
Zoe Winters.
She
should be the A24 mascot.
She's in Succession. She's the guy, the girl that's sleeping with Logan, right? And they put on the news. Is she not?
I don't know if I got that far in just.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, she is.
Chuckles the clown. You think those two characters in this? I think those two characters in this movie would have actually done that dance, gone to that dance thing.
Yes, I think they're the type of affluent. Like, I think it's very implied throughout. Like, he's
like culturally.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Also, like the choreographer was the choreographer of Testament of Anne Lee.
Yes.
Which somehow my girlfriend clocked. Mid movie, I don't know how she did that, but also the adult Sophie in After Sun, the adult daughter, version.
Mm.
Very random filmography.
The coworker actress, I think, is putting together a pretty good resume too. Haley Gates, she was in The Moment, which she's really good in. She's like the most regular character in that entire movie. She was in Marty Supreme before that, Challenges before that, Uncut Gems before that. So she's kind of putting together.
She was really good too.
Yeah,
I liked her as like an ancillary like moral dilemma as well. Like, she cheated, went through with it, but she also kind of, you know, is like recoiling at this idea of like somebody thinking about shooting up a school. Like,
yeah,
that was they made you think through all of these different people. Like, would you judge them? Do I deserve to judge them? Like, I love that there's obviously the school shooting storyline, but that's really not what the movie is about necessarily. Like, there's a little bit of commentary there, but it's mainly about like how much empathy are you willing to extend to somebody else.
We don't even really know much about their relationship. Not really. Like, we get a cute flashback scene and the letter that they were going to write, but like, you just jump into it and it's going full speed.
I love that everyone's reaction too when they heard about it. It's like, yeah, I'd call the police. Like, what are you talking about? Like, you call the police for a non-crime that happened?
Also, like, 16 years later, whatever it is, I don't understand. Like, what?
And they address that too, obviously, in the movie. But I feel like that is the reaction somebody would have. Like, if you told them, what would you do? And they'd be like, oh, I'd call the police. Like, what does that mean? Like, for what? Didn't happen.
Yeah, at the end of the year, I'm sure I'm going to say Alanaheim is. It should have been nominated because I'm sure she won't be, but she's going to be on the list of people who should have been nominated.
She was great.
Yeah.
So good.
So yeah, pretty high marks on this one for us. Warning. You may hate it. Like, it's like, and I totally get if people hate it, but yeah, all pretty high for us. 91 for me, 90 for Kirk, 87 from Ken Jack, Clemmer and Gooch, 85. Definitely check out the drama. Strong, strong contender. Top one of the year for me personally so far. First one above a 90 for me. That is the drama.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium, where each episode releases 3 hours early. So get it ad-free before anybody else, only when you join Rumble Premium. New episodes of Surviving Barstool will be released every Sunday and Wednesday, leading up to the Labor Day finale on September 7th. You can watch Surviving Barstool at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium and everywhere else at 8 p.m. Eastern.
Next week, I don't know exactly what we're doing next week. I know one movie. It's got the greatest tagline in the history of movies. Me in Tuscany, the Italian rom-com. The tagline, she came for the pasta and got lost in the sauce.
Oh, is this the one with
Halle Bailey?
The one I just saw that, oh, Christ almighty.
Yep. There's a couple other ones. There's a Jonah Hill directed movie, which I think is one of Apple TV with Keanu Reeves called Outcome. And then there's a shitty Netflix movie. So we'll see, but we'll keep an eye on our social media. We'll say something, but I think the Jonah Hill one makes sense. I know it's an Apple movie.
Probably does. Faces of Death comes out.
Keanu Reeves, he's in it. Cameron Diaz, Matt Bomer. So we'll probably do that one. A little bit of a lull, I think, for a few weeks. I know there's the Lee Cronin's The Mummy.
Yep.
Oh, did you see they had
Love Lee Cronin movies, baby.
Did you see the Blumhouse official account had to post and be crazy. Like, they had to post and be like, Brendan Fraser is not in this movie. Like, the official guy.
That you have to make an X amount of money at the box office to have your name before the title. Like, I get why they're doing it. Because, like, Lee Cronin's The Mummy. If you're that worried about people, then just don't make it.
I swear to God, I thought it said Lee Daniels The Mummy. I was like, I'm fucking in for that. Like let's do it.
Mother Mary movie in a couple weeks looks interesting, though.
Oh, yeah. It's David Lowry.
Yeah, that's a couple weeks away.
Was the last thing he did that fucking Peter Pan and Wendy movie? That's crazy.
One of the weirdest careers you'll ever find, David Lowry. We got to interview him. Great, great interview. He did Pete's Dragon, A Ghost Story, Old Man and the Gun, The Green Knight, Peter Pan and Wendy.
Wes Redford movie, yeah. Insane.
Yeah.
Would you watch Ang Lee's version of The Mummy? I'd probably watch that.
I'd be much more interested in that than
Tyler Perry's. I would watch.
Oh my god, that'd be amazing. Tyler Perry's The Mummy.
Tyler Perry's Big Mummy's House. There it is. We're gonna make $1 billion at the box office.
Well, Colleen Hoover, will she eventually get that in front of the titles or no? I would think so, right?
Do you get it if you're the author and not the director?
Stephen King would have that a lot.
John Grisham never did, though, huh?
Oh, the Rainmaker's John Grisham's
the
Rainmaker.
That's true. John Grisham's the Rainmaker. That's true.
Yeah. Good point.
Good John Boyd.
Andy Weir is honestly.
I would love if every Colleen Hoover movie was Colleen Hoover's The Blank. Yeah. That would be that fits that fits her new also her movies need to be a cinematic universe, by the way. They all need to be connected. That will get me more interested in that.
Yeah, I need the guy.
They need to do what the DCU did. I need all Colleen Hoover movies to overconnect. Like really obnoxious.
That's what The Housemaid is for. That's what Sydney Sweeney's The Housemaid. She is the Avenger of the Hooververse.
She just go work now for Curse? I know we did this. She just go work for her now? That's like her next job?
Yeah. She just goes, if somebody needs their husband disappeared, you call the housemaid.
Yeah.
Big like titty that. Housemaid.
I like that.
Colleen Hoover, sadly.
Trailers. Did you guys talk about the trailer for The Backrooms last week?
think briefly, right?
I think so.
I don't remember.
Okay, I didn't know if that was last weekend. That was an interesting trailer. Very fascinating. Anything Renata Rhines, I'll go see, but that was an interesting trailer.
I'm really excited for that movie.
Three trailers we'll talk about here. First one, Masters of the Universe. I stand by this. This is going to be incredible. The odds on that are about plus 2,500. But I'm taking them. I'm betting it. There's something I want this to be fun and dumb and good, kind of like Dungeons and Dragons. And I think the worst thing this movie has going for it is people are comparing it to Dungeons and Dragons, and it's not going to live up to that whatsoever. What did anyone have thoughts on the new Masters of the Universe trailer?
I don't know who it's for. I just don't know I don't know how this movie makes any money. Like, I'm confused by it. Like,
it's a weird IP, right? I don't quite know.
You have to be like my age to have grown up with He-Man, and like anyone younger than me, I don't think has any connection to He-Man.
He was gone by the time the 90s rolled around.
Yeah, done.
I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I never saw He-Man on TV. Did you guys?
I did when I was a kid. I'm old, but yeah, I didn't.
I don't know how you guys would have.
There's a lock. I'll fall asleep during this movie for 20 minutes. That's a fucking guarantee. guarantee. Top five pick this year. I would say.
I have heard they're keeping Jared Leto off the press tour, which is
smart. Yeah, he's the voice of Skeletor. You don't have to see him. And I give him credit. They actually sold out and did a real Skeletor. They didn't try to, skirt around it and do something different. Like, they made it look like it's supposed to look like. So I don't know. I hope it's fun. I'm partially kidding when I say I think it's going to be great. Though Travis Knight has, the Bumblebee movie was really good. I do think he's got a little something.
The trailer has some comedy in it, so I guess there's that. They're not taking themselves too seriously like the first one back in the 80s.
Next trailer, I'm gonna let Clemmer cook on this one because I know Clemmer was confused, worried about Supergirl from the last trailer. The song choice killed him. What do you think about the new trailer?
Same concerns. I just don't know how this is gonna make a lot of money. I watched it with Robbie, our coworker Robbie Fox, and he was like, "Well, this has a Guardians of the Galaxy feel to it." I said, I don't think it does.
Definitely trying for it.
No, yeah, I don't think it pulls it off. I love DC Comics, so I'm excited for this. I'll go see it, but I'm the anomaly. I think the average person, there's no reason to go see this movie in this trailer.
It's Millie Alcock. Come on.
I don't think most people know what a Millie Alcock is.
That's just you. It's just you.
So the first Superman last year, which I think we probably all liked, made 620 worldwide. So if they can get high threes, maybe worldwide, which I don't know.
Ceiling, right?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't. I don't. I don't really. It didn't do much for me. But it didn't. It didn't see. It didn't turn me off to it. But it didn't do anything for me. I don't know. It just felt. It felt like it's been made. That trailer. I've seen a trailer in some form or fashion a billion times.
Other trailer for a movie, Over Your Dead Body, which I believe you guys interviewed.
Dermot Tacone,
Dermot Tacone for this movie. Jason Segel's in it, Samara Weaving. It's a remake of a 2021 Norwegian movie. A couple tries to reconnect while on vacation, only to find out they have plans to kill each other. This one comes out a little later this month, a few weeks.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that soon? Just,
I already saw this. I don't actually know if my embargo is up on it, but it's very similar to some slight alterations, the Norwegian one, which is on Netflix. And it stars actually the guy from The Martian, the Norwegian dude on the ship in The Martian, or Scandinavian guy.
Yep.
So that guy plays the role of Siegel in the Norwegian one. But I've seen it. I don't know how much I can say. I would say I liked it. And I think that's general enough to say. But okay. I think you guys will enjoy most of
Yorma.
It too.
Great interview too.
Yeah.
Look for that. Dropping 420, baby.
420, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's fucking talented. I mean, that whole Lonely Island crew is just
crazy.
Great. And obviously what he's made so far has been pretty fucking impressive. Like, it's kind of crazy. Directed, I think, an underrated movie in MacGruber. He was a writer on Hot Rod, which is fucking amazing. Pop Star is incredible. And he has this one. Obviously, he worked. I know he worked on Palm Springs a little bit. I know he didn't direct Palm Springs, but yeah. So that whole Lonely Island crew is fantastic. So yeah, Over Your Dead Body coming out in a few weeks. And then not much really anything on news, both mildly Marvel related. Avengers Doomsday seems to be blinking first. Kevin Feige, it sounds like they might move the Avengers Doomsday launch up a week earlier. A week, right? It'd be 7 days.
Yeah, well, that's 11. Open now because Jumanji moved. Jumanji is now after the Dune and Avengers.
Thank God we have this show.
Plumber, remember when Pedro Gomez followed Barry Bonds around for like 3 years?
Yeah.
That is you now with the Jumanji.
You're being a shithead. You've become obsessed with this.
It's defined you.
For years,
your story at Barcelona that got you on the show is when you planned a school shooting, that famous tale during Barcelona that got you the job.
But now it is
your obsession with the Jumanji 3 or 4 release date.
Yes, because it's
a You're right. It's big chess pieces.
It's huge. But now it leaves it wide open. So now Avengers can go there and have the whole weekend themselves.
Does Plummer have two phones going like Adam Schefter on like a He's got, you're being a cock.
You're being a cock right now.
He's got The Rock on line one.
There's this guy. When that movie comes out, there's going to be a picture of The Rock with Clemmer. It's going to have like a corny caption like it takes guts to stand up for you believe in. Thanks to my day one man, Chris Clemmer.
Biggest month in recent box office history. I'm excited about it. Sorry, I have a little enthusiasm, guys, about Jumanji.
You brought up Jumanji. I think you get paid every time you say Jumanji. Like you get it.
I'm starting to wonder. I am starting to wonder what's going on here.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's smart to move it. Get a week of the IMAX. They'll eventually get the IMAX after Dune's run goes out. I think those are just too big of movies to be on the same weekend. As fun as that would be, like I like having back to back event weekends. So, shout out Dune. They fucking held strong. Denny's like, I ain't fucking moving. It sounds like Avengers will move a week.
Is there a world where this is the wrong decision, though?
For whom?
To move up?
I don't think so. I think, no, because I don't think a week makes that much of a difference. I think if they would have moved to, like, because I don't think them moving, I don't think Avengers is hurt by moving. I think Dune might have benefited a little bit from, like, a combo, like, Barbenheimer type thing. I think moving, like, a month might have been, like, okay, we'll see how this plays out. But a week, I don't think so.
I also think long term, if you look at the box 3 months after, I don't think it's any different for those two movies, regardless of when it opens. Maybe a little IMAX, but not much. People are going to see both those movies who want to see it.
Do you care about it being number one for the weekend? Because there's a world where Dune probably never would have finished number one if they opened the
weekend. No chance.
So now, not with those two head to head. How about week two? Would Dune week two beat?
So that's going to be the interesting debate, right? If Doomsday stinks, how big is the drop-off, and will it be number one the week Dune comes out? Because that will be the interesting debate. Because I don't think it would have beat it. It would not have. No chance. As much as I love Dune.
Week two, it might, maybe.
Yeah, that'll be very interesting to see. That'll be the thing to keep an eye on.
So it kind of benefits Dune a couple different ways. Like, A, it could have number one title. B, it's going to have a weekend all to itself. Like, Marvel moving, I think would be very beneficial.
It's better for Dune for sure, which I like. So I'm excited. That's what an event year we have. So I'm glad there's another. I like that it's separated. I like another event weekend. That's just, it's going to be a fun
also
year.
Coming out in December, I should mention, is Jumanji. Yes. It's coming out the week after.
Is that three or four? I never understand that.
Well, it depends if you consider the first one.
Do you have your number one spot of the year just already, Pence? Like, is it just already there?
It's an ink. Yeah.
Okay. And then Jonathan Majors fell out a window while filming a new movie for Daily Wire.
Mm-hmm. Shucks.
Fucking commie bastards. Set him up.
So then the people on set walked off for safety concerns, and the producer said, we don't negotiate with communists.
What does that mean? What does that mean?
I'm still not sure this is real or not. Like, I'm still not, like, I don't even know what to make of this.
Fucking, like, I love that idea of like OSHA walking in and being like, get the fuck out of here, OSHA, you commie cocksucker. It's like, you fell through a window. What does that have to do? Like, it's crazy.
He was good in Creed 3, though. He was good in Creed 3.
He was fantastic in Creed 3.
And he was good in Magazine Dreams, too.
Oh, he's a good actor. He's a fucking
yeah, he just, the career has exploded.
He's got some shit going on.
Or imploded. What have you been watching in the last couple weeks? Anything that, kind of sticks out there? I know the Paradise Gang, Paradise Season 2 wrapped up. Dumb as hell, but I can't get enough of it.
I'm so happy it's out of my life.
The most telegraphed show of all time. In the first two episodes, they were like, hey, this is what's happening all season. We're going to tell you right now. It's like, and like to the point of like winking at the camera where it's like, holy shit. I almost got to the point where I'm like, that can't be what happens. It's so obvious how they've telegraphed this, but no, that's what happened.
No. Last episode was rough. Not a good finish.
No.
One of the biggest season drop-offs that I can remember in a while in television.
It's turned it into a different show. Like, it just made it, and like, I look people like comparing it to like Lost or something like that, but like Lost, they built up the mystery for a while. Like, you got like three seasons before you really got into the freaky shit. And like, this one's just like, hey, we're kind of grounded in reality, apocalypse show, like this is could potentially really happen. And all of a sudden it's like, yeah, now we're doing time travel. It's like, well, now it's a different thing. It's a totally different thing. Like I mentioned it to you, Clemmer. It's like we're making Armageddon 2, but now it's about aliens. It's like, well, that's not grounded in the rules you set in this first season. So I don't know. Very disappointed with this.
Kirk, did you finish? I think you did as well. We finished Love Story, the JFK show.
Yep.
JFK Jr. show. Kind of a weird episode, a little uncomfortable. They showed a lot of the plane flight.
Yeah, I was surprised. Strange.
A lot of speculation on what happened before the plane went down, which I think is a little weird.
Yeah, that's the Murphyverse, though. There's just stuff going on all the time that they just assume a bunch of things. I feel like that's another series that was fun, and then it just kind of, I don't know, where do you think it lost its way? Like almost exactly halfway through?
Hmm.
Would you say, Jeff?
Wait, say it again. I didn't hear
that. Would you say that's the season lost its way about almost exactly halfway through?
Oh, yes. It was towards the end. It was dumb and stupid, but I liked it because it knew what it was. And then it just, as the relationship kind of fell apart,
yeah, they didn't really
that storyline, it lost its way. And again, it just felt weird. It felt, they had this one weird scene kind of around the Princess Diana stuff. That felt speculative and like a little weird. Like, look, I know a lot of these things are speculative, but it felt like, it crossed the line and like almost gross at times where I was didn't really work.
Yeah. I did not love the last episode.
But you could definitely look, obviously a lot of like made like biopic type stuff. You have to kind of piece together how you think it went down. So I'm not saying you can kind of put your foot in the wrong part of the sandbox there. And I think they did. And then Memory of a Killer, worst network TV drama of all time.
The greatest.
Like legitimately, I think it's the worst network TV drama ever.
I think Michael Cirioli is on the greatest TV show of all time and the worst TV show of all time. I think he did it.
Like watch Love Story. It's kind of wild. Watch Paradise for sure. It's worth it. Well, don't watch Memory of a Killer. It stinks. No. It's fucking stinks. A bad show.
Check out Super Critics. We did Batman 1989 with Robbie. And it was fun to actually cover a good movie. It's been so long since we covered a good comic book movie. So that was fun. Jack Nicholson's incredible.
Pitt's still good. That is one of the worst fandoms I've ever seen in my life. Like one of the dumbest and like least media literate fan bases I've ever seen on a TV show. Like they are, and the Pitt cast talks about it too. Like these people are imagining things. They're confusing. What's the Michael C. Hall quote where he's like, you're confusing fiction with reality, brother. Like these people are insane. And you guys don't have to deal with it because you're not like big into the Pitt, I know, but it's hilarious actually kind of to wade through the waters of it. But
I'm going to try it again, Ken Jacks. I loved the first like five or six seasons like in time of ER.
Yeah.
And, like, it really trailed off. But I watched the first half of the first episode and I just didn't. I'll try it again because people fucking love it.
It's definitely less dramatic than ER. Like they're going for like a different sort of audience, I guess. Yeah, but like it's still very, very good. It's way more technical and it's challenging, I would say, especially in the first season. Like they're not walking you through anything, like doing the Star Trek thing. Like, yeah, it's like this thing is like when this thing does this thing. It's like they just throw an acronym at you. If you want to look it up, you can look it up. If not, you can probably pick it up from context clues, which I enjoy.
Anyone have anything else? I had a like look inward, get help run of getting boutique movies in the last couple of weeks, but I'm not home, so I'll show them off next week. But not good, like bad, like too many boxes. But I'll show them off next week. I did Radiant, Second Sight Films. I actually bought a mailbox in England so I could buy movies that don't ship to the US and have them shipped there and then ship to my house. So a really bad, like look inward, like you have a problem type thing. But I'm excited to show them off next week. I see Gooch has some stuff.
Yeah, Criterion sale, what was that, 2 weeks ago now? Well, they finally came in. Got a network. Classic.
That's such a great add to the collection.
Yeah, Thief, Arsenic and Lace. Got a nice little Kurosawa double feature with Sandro,
yep, good
Yojimbo,
one.
And then Malcolm X.
Oh, yeah, that's a great haul right there. That's the network is that great, great being in the Criterion Collection. Great transfer, looks fantastic. The sale was both good and bad. Squid and the Whale, I didn't know was a Criterion. I didn't know Criterion had Squid and the Whale, so I got that. Oh, got some good stuff. Here we go.
Stella Blue Coffee's new can lattes are here. Crafted with 100% Colombian coffee, each can is a good source of protein and comes in two smooth flavors, espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. And whether you're braving your morning commute or chasing your pup, Stella Blue cans are for those always on the go and for those who care. Stella Blue is more than just great coffee. It's about giving back. I named the brand after my rescue dog, Stella, who inspired our mission to help more dogs find their forever homes. Every purchase supports animal rescue organizations, so when you drink Stella Blue, you're not just fueling your day, you're saving a dog's life. Try the new cans today, taste the difference, and make a difference. All new Stella Blue coffee can lattes now available at stellabluecoffee.com or subscribe on Amazon for 10% off.
The top 50 movies of the century so far, the year 2000 through 2025.
Wilson!
What we did. We all did our list. We did 75 movies, and we made a point system. I won't get too into the weeds in the point system, but if you rank a movie one, that gets 75 points. If you rank it two, 74, so on and so forth. I also factored in bonus points. If it's on everybody's top 50, out of the 75, it gets a bonus point. It gets bonus points. If a movie is in the top five, it gets bonus points. If it's ranked number one, it gets bonus points. So because we have five people here, I figured let's give the movies that kind of score the highest the biggest advantage. So we all ranked our top 75. We made the list, a little bit of a fun, formula on Excel, and it spit out our top 50 movies of the 21st century so far, 2000 through 2025. We will start this list with 50 through 41. And I will tell you where everyone had it ranked. And then we will kind of discuss and go from there. So here are the first 10 movies on our top 50 movies of the 21st century so far. Number 50. It was on one person's list. Number 50. 2014's Interstellar by Christopher Nolan. It was ranked third.
50?
It was ranked only on one list. Gooch had it number three. Gooch, I'll let you take the floor. The number 50 movie.
This is egregious.
Of the 21st century, Interstellar. I will say I am not as high on this as other movies. I am glad it made our list because I do think, while it's our list, I was like, I'm glad it made our list because a lot of people would have this outside of this group of five. Much higher, but for us, it only made it to number 50. So, Gooch, take it away.
I mean, that is insane. One of, if not the best working director in Hollywood, his most emotional work, an absolute love letter to space and science fiction that came before it, and humanity's endeavor into the unknown, into the need to know. And goddamn, 50? 50!
It made it.
It did make it.
Oh, this is going to be fun. This list is going to be fun, I can tell. God. But I mean, Interstellar is easily top five for me. And it, when I first saw it, I would say it was in the top 20, but surprising. I think most people, I'd say the more serious critics have rewatched and gone back to it. And if they didn't hate it on the first watch, have nitpicked it since then, but its issues have only endeared itself to me more. Like the nonsensical love is the fifth dimension has only grown on me. Like I love that. I really do. So Interstellar, I would love to see it higher, but God, thank God it made this list.
Yeah, that's where it's always been a little too convoluted. Is not the right word for this, for how I want to describe it, because convoluted is too bad for how I view it, because I like this movie and it's in the 90s for me. But it just, the emotional connection for me, and I think you just said it, Gooch, it hasn't grown on me as much. And I feel like I have to force myself to really – tie in emotionally with this movie? Where would, like, Kirk, Ken, Jack, Clemmer, where would you have it? Obviously, rough because it's not in your top 75. Like,
it's not my favorite. No, I mean, look, I don't like 2001. Like, I don't like Contact. Like, it's just not my. I mean, I love Nolan, but yeah, it just didn't connect for me. Obviously, I'm in the minority, but yeah, it's never resonated for me like that. It just hasn't. Maybe I need to watch it again.
Yeah,
yeah. I think those are two movies that I love too.
Yeah, yeah.
I like 2001 and I like Contact quite a bit. I still have this below those movies, like. Interstellar for me, and I love Nolan. I can understand why people love this. Just for me, it just never quite connected.
There are scenes in Interstellar that I think I would have above, like, things in my top 10 for sure. I think as a collective movie, it's different, though. Like, some of the stuff I just don't register with. Like, the Love is the Fifth Dimension thing has never really connected with me personally, and I think that does lower it a bit. Because the rest of it is so, like, I don't, grounded reality is the wrong way to put it. But, like, you know what I mean? It's more sci-fi, and that's kind of, like, fantastical. And that just never connected with me. I wouldn't blame you for loving that, though. And obviously, a lot of people still do.
I will say this. It's my number one Nolan movie right now. But if we were able to put the five-minute prologue of The Odyssey into, that's the best 5 minutes, I think, of movie I've seen this decade. That'll, so I cannot wait for it. God.
So this is why I put the bonus points in, because I do think, while it is all five of us, I think if someone has something in the top five, top 10, I think it should get a little bump, because I think that's kind of the point, is it's, we want to make this kind of a fun list and kind of have everyone's, like, top movies show face a little bit. But Interstellar, number 50 of the century so far. Number 49, the number 49th movie of the 21st century so far. Two people had it on their lists. I had it at 41. Ken Jack had it at 27. Taylor Sheridan's 2017 movie Wind River makes it into the list at number 49. Ken Jack, I know this is a top 30 for you. You are a big, and I am too. 41 for me. I love that run from Taylor Sheridan is fantastic. But yeah, you have Wind River at 27. So I'll let you take it away. Thoughts on Wind River?
Yeah, I love Wind River. I think it's, like, a perfectly executed neo-Western. I love it's my favorite, I think, Jeremy Renner performance, or at least among the top. I love all the side actors. Bernthal, I think, cuts a rug in it. A lot of the smaller guys that, like, I don't know what you would call them, like, the Sheridan Universe dudes that just show up in everything he ever makes. They're all fantastic. Love the ending, the, like, why are you flanking me scene is so, that's one of my favorite shootouts, like, ever. It's so fucking good. And Elizabeth Olsen, obviously, great as well. Enjoy it a lot. I think that's, he has, among the Sheridan universe, like a Frontier trilogy or whatever, it's the weakest of the three, but it is still so good. Yeah, I love it, and I just don't know where that version of Taylor Sheridan has been. I wish he was doing movies again instead of making 8,000.
Yeah, that's the crazy. That's, like, the sad thing about bringing this movie up, and we'll see if he shows up on this list again. But he had this incredible run, and then, again, some of them, he had incredible directors as well, and some of the ones he's made since then, like the Angelina Jolie fire movie. What was that called? Like
Those Who Wish Me Dead?
Those Who Wish Me Dead, yeah.
Yeah. What does everyone else think about Wind River, who didn't have it on their list?
Fantastic. I mean, I think it's, in some respects, his strongest, I would say. I don't know. It's much softer than the other two that came before. It's also the one that he directed. I think the only one from that trilogy he directed.
It's the one which is weird, because, and I'm guilty of this as well, where some of these other ones you're like, oh, well, he's directing them. But, like, he has directed a good one. So he's also, I know, Kirk, you say his, the Yellowstone universe is a universe for, it's a show for dumb people.
For dummies, yeah. Now I have a bias now. It affects my, his name, I think of, like, the Yellowstone scenes, and it affects this movie. That's not fair. He's being punished by me for Yellowstone, I think. Where he's only probably made $700 million, so, you know. But no, it's very good. It's very good. Yeah, if I had done the top 100, it would have been on it.
So Wind River, the 49th ranked movie on our list of the top 50 movies of the 21st century so far. The number 48 movie. The 48th ranked movie, according to our list of the 21st century so far, is on one person's list, and it is their number one ranked movie. That is 2002, Sam Mendes, Road to Perdition. Chris Klemmer, the number one movie of the century so far.
The most beautiful film ever made. I can't believe this, I'm the only one who had this on the list at all.
It's not in anybody's list.
What
are you talking about? It's a shit movie.
It's a shit movie.
That's a bad take.
Oh, God almighty. Number one? Even number one?
Number one. I love this movie so much. It's stunning. It's an amazing movie to watch. The performances are fantastic. You don't think it's a shit movie?
I think it's a shitty movie. I would give it a 40 out of 100.
That's crazy.
I think it sucks. It's dreadful. It's fucking terrible.
No,
I can't believe you have that number one. I cannot believe that's got to be bullshit. You do it. Number one? Most beautiful movie ever made?
No. No, it's the best movie of the century.
You just said it's the most beautiful movie. Did you just say that?
Yeah. Most beautiful movie ever made.
Ever made.
I think it's unbelievable cinematography.
Okay.
Incredible.
Yep. It is gorgeous.
Tom Hanks is so good.
Conrad Hall, right? Did he shoot it?
What's that?
I think Conrad Hall shot it, right?
Conrad Hall was the last movie he did.
Yeah.
Great cinematography. And this is like such an amazing movie
to
watch. What's that?
He takes pictures.
Jude Law is really good in this.
He's really good in it.
He's really good in this.
Paul Newman.
I actually don't think Hanks is good in it.
Really?
Yeah, I think he's miscast. Purposely, I know, but I just don't think he works. Newman's good. It just doesn't. Yeah, it did not work.
Jude Law, I think, is really good in this. I love the father and son road trip element. Like it all hits me. I'm guessing, Kirk, you're the only one that thinks this is a bad movie. I'm guessing everyone else thinks it's a very.
Oh no!
Good movie.
Oh, okay. Well, all right.
I mean, you're right. You're gonna be.
Well, I think you're the only one. Thinks it's the best movie of the century. So I think
that's fair.
I think you
came out saying it was horrible. I'm guessing nobody.
I bet you most people will say it's closer to shit than the best movie of this century, though.
Maybe.
Yeah. So there you go.
No one else will say it's shit. So I don't think.
We'll find
out. I don't think anyone can watch that movie and say it's a bad movie.
I bet you these three guys, I'm not going to speak, well, I will speak for them, never crossed their mind to put this movie on in the top 75 list. Never. Not for a second.
Not really.
No. Yeah.
I think it's a fantastic movie. I think it's severely underrated by people like you who are just going to be shitty for no reason. I think it's a legitimately great movie. I
would hope so. You haven't ranked number one.
I have this number one.
It's a great movie.
I have to defend it because people, because you're over
you,
there.
You probably give it three stars on your stupid fucking letterbox. You don't even know how to do it.
I'm being authentic. I genuinely love this movie.
Yeah, I don't like the movie.
You would not give this a 40. That's bullshit. That's a lie.
No, I definitely would.
Oh yeah, now you're gonna be like all angry.
So you have fucking Castaway in your top five.
I don't know if I can cast him at top
five. Right, whatever. Okay. Go ahead. I can't fucking.
Close. I do not have the top five. It's very close, though.
Clemmer. So I'm going to guess for the 75 to 2000, your number one movie, probably Godfather, right? Godfather, Jaws.
Godfather is my number one movie of all time.
So is that how bad the 25 years that followed the year 2000 have been, where we went from Godfather to Road to Perdition?
It's a good question. How many of those movies would you rank in that 20? Would you rank Goodfellas over Road? Would you rank Goodfellas?
I have 10 movies that came out before this century ahead of.
You have the 11th best movie of all time?
Yes. I do.
No, I love it. Stick to it.
Listen, yeah, you gotta ride with it.
I do.
It is a beautiful movie. Like, gorgeous to look at. And I like Daniel. I think Daniel Craig, I think, is fantastic in it, too.
Great cast.
Newman. Yeah. I don't know if I can't go there. I can't follow you there, Clemmer. You know I like the movie. I can't go that far.
That's fine. I am a little shocked. And no one else said it.
I swear to God. Because I actually laughed like 10 times this movie came out the first time. I would put Deuce Bigelow Male Gigolo ahead of this movie. dead serious, because it made me laugh. Like, what's his face plays the, who's the guy who plays the detective? William, Deuce Bigelow Male Gigolo. The guy who keeps zipping his pants up, showing his dick. What the hell is it? It made me laugh like 10 times. Much funnier than, much better. I'd rank
much funnier than Road to Perdition.
European Gigolo I would not put ahead, but the first Deuce Bigelow with your friend Rob Schneider, mm-hmm. I would put ahead of it.
Yeah. William Forsythe.
William Forsythe. Very funny in it. Very funny.
You ever see European Gigolo?
I hope
not as good.
I hope you're this antagonistic when the Lord of the Rings movies comes out on the list, and you're all and you shout at them too.
Well, I mean, they won Best Picture. Like, I'm not sure. What
I know. I can't. I'm looking forward to that because it's a one way street. Because you're not going to yell at them. But God, let's see what you.
Three of them are going to have it, Clemmer. I mean, there's a difference.
Let's see what happens. I'm just saying.
Okay. I will. I promise. I will.
Make notes, people at home.
You're a fucking cocksucker if you have on the list. Okay. You happy, Clemmer? Jesus.
So number 50, Interstellar. Number 49, Wind River. Number 48,
so angry. So angry. If I'm sensitive, you're so angry.
This number 47 ranked movie according to our list of the 21st century so far. Three people have it. 44th for me. 26 for Ken Jack. 64 for Clemmer. That's Adam McKay's 2015 movie, The Big Short. I love The Big Short. A movie that shouldn't work. Is both probably the best thing that happened to Adam McKay and maybe the worst, because I like Vice, but like that style didn't translate as well down the line with his other stuff. But I think The Big Short is great. I think Ryan Gosling is so fucking good in this movie. I think Steve Carell's great. Everyone in this, Christian Bale, even like the small Brad Pitt role. I think it's a fascinating movie. I think it's funny, also like informative. Like it's like a smart biopic. I've always thoroughly enjoyed The Big Short. From the moment I saw it through now, never wavered on kind of how I felt about it. Ken Jack, Clemmer, you got a little heat just now. I'll let you go on this one. Anything? What are your thoughts on that? It's a little lower on your list, but you had it up there.
Oh, no, this is a fantastic movie. And just the way, this is not an easy story to tell. Like, it's kind of, it's economics and housing crisis is kind of a boring story on paper. Michael Lewis, his book is good, but still, even making that into film is tough. But then even having a good release, like the Margot Robbie stuff, and then you get this Bale performance that is kind of unique for him. I don't know if I've seen him kind of play that kind of role a ton after this. I don't know. And then Carell is very good. Like, you're just getting a lot of good, interesting performances about a topic that shouldn't be good or interesting.
Ken Jack, you have it as high as anyone has it here, 26.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's very complicated subject matter to go for. And I think especially at that time, like, this is the dude that did, like, The Other Guys and Step Brothers. Like, for him to step up to the plate and tackle the housing crisis and the crash, I think it was crazy, and he did a great job. So many great, like, the actors you mentioned, like, I think they're all fantastic. There's no bad performance in it, even when you go down to, like, having Selena Gomez doing, like, an informative side thing to explain CDOs or whatever. I think that's great. But then all the side character, like, cocksucker characters, too, were great. Like, the Asian dude explaining CDOs over the sushi dinner was, like, hilarious. Mm-hmm. The two, I think it was Billy Magnuson and Schmidt from New Girl.
I was trying to think of his name.
Yeah, they're fantastic. Like, all the little side bits are all amazing. And then, of course, like, Gosling just coming in and just crushing it. Like, this is my Quant. Like, there's so many scenes.
That scene alone, the Quant scene is so fucking funny.
He doesn't even speak English. And he's like, I speak English. He says it's better to be mysterious. But there's so many great scenes in it. And I think it really holds up well, too. You go back and watch it, and I think there's not really much that you would change. I really enjoy it.
Did we lose McKay because of this movie, though?
Yeah, definitely. I mean? That's yes. That's just unfair, but that's why I can't. Yeah,
it was the bargain. His brain got broken. Unfortunately,
he got the Sorkin disease. His brain is just
big time.
Yeah,
yeah.
50.
Number 46. Three people have it on the list. I have it at 64. Ken Jack has it at 45. Gooch has it at 21. So like Gooch started out, the number 46 ranked movie of the 21st century so far for us is Bong Joon-ho's 2003 movie Memories of Murder.
Banger.
Gooch 21.
Yeah, I think it's
pretty high up there for you.
If I had to say my favorite, I don't know if I Parasite just a few spots. We'll get to that, I'm sure, later. But Parasite a few spots ahead of it. But if I had to pick my favorite Bong Joon-ho movie, this is it. I think this is just absolutely the best detective movie of the 21st century. Mm-hmm. Best process movie. Just darker than all hell. Devastating, depressing, and just absolute gut punch finale. Like, the way it ends is
super unique crime mystery thrill, like really just out there. And like, this is you want to talk about before, like, he really became big. Like, he's always had the ability to blend genre and tone in a way that not many people can do it, who are making movies active right now. Memories of Murder is just fucking, it's fantastic. Great Criterion release. Yeah. Fantastic movie.
Nothing makes you want to do a 2-foot jump into somebody's chest more than watching Memories of a Murder. I love that shit. It's fantastic. Such a good movie. And the guy, the murderer, watched the movie, right? Like, I believe the guy that they're chasing, like, in real life, he ended up watching it before he got caught or something like that. It's crazy.
That's fucking wild.
Yeah. Insane story, but a great movie, too.
So Interstellar 50, Wind River 49, Road to Perdition 48, The Big Short 47, Memories of Murder 46, 45. It's on two people's list. It's on Kirk and Clemmer's list.
I made it. All right.
They got something in common. Yeah, you have a little run going these next couple now.
Here we go.
Number 45 of the 21st century so far is Richard Linklater's 2014 movie Boyhood, a movie that took him a zillion years to make. This is one that is super, super close to my 75, just missed. So I think this is a great one to have on the list, especially just for the achievement of what it is. But Kirk, I'll let you go. It's your first time on this list so far, a movie that you've had.
Yeah, I guess I said, this last week. I think he's the director that I for sure have most on the list, which surprised me at the time, but he's made great movies. And I wonder sometimes if it is an award of achievement, you know, but yeah, it just hit me. I remember being in the theater watching the first time, and it just struck me. You know, I think Ethan Hawke is great, and Patricia Arquette, I think, is a very deserving Oscar winner. The kid is good in it, too. And to be able to pull it off, I still think all these years later, I can't believe it's been 12 years, just a great director, who, by the way, while doing this, made these other great films. Yeah, it just works for me. It just hit me in the right spot.
Kirk, you said Linklater, you think, will be the director that appeared most on your list?
Yeah, no, I just said correct. That at the start. Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think between, yeah, man, I guess spoil it, but yeah, I think he has like four or five on. One really small one that I'd be surprised if anybody else has, maybe. But all the way to last year. I mean, you know, he's popped up a bunch for me.
Top 50 for you, Clemmer.
Yeah, it's done so well, and I love how like they're, I don't know if it's just because the time changing or just the way Linklater has it planned out, but the way their lives change, even the stuff like with the stepfather, like, and how that shifts things,
right.
and you have kind of this new character that is such a profound part of their lives for a certain time, but then like just like time, and then he's gone, like just the way it shows how time marches on and people come and go, but these parents are always there for you, even as they change. It's just fascinating. It's just done so well.
Also, the greatest, and I thought at the time when I saw Days of Kids, now I've raised, have two teenagers, the greatest director of teenagers of all time.
Oh, yeah.
I think.
Nobody gets it more.
I think he's the best ever at it. Yeah.
That's actually an interesting question. Like, who's the best age range director? Like, is Christopher Columbus the best kid director?
I mean, tough to beat. Yeah, I mean, just with E.T., I think it's tough to beat Spielberg. But yeah, he's definitely a candidate. Yeah.
Teenagers, was that maybe Hughes?
John Hughes.
Yeah. Definitely. But John Hughes was directing but I just think Dazed and Confused and the way it's interesting too, Clemmer, like his daughter is in the movie, but she didn't want to do it. So she's less and less as the movie goes on. By the way, he's shooting another one of these like right now.
Yeah, merrily we go along.
Yeah, he's in the middle of another one of these projects, so it's
with Beanie Feldstein, which is so funny. Right, she like signed on for that at the peak of her career, and she's gone missing since.
Yeah.
The 44th best movie of the 21st century so far, according to our rankings. Two people have it on their list. Kirk has it at 31, Gooch at 19, Richard Linklater's 2004 Before Sunset, back-to-back spots for Linklater, which this one just missed the list before, speaking of Criterion, it's great box set Criterion, fantastic trilogy, Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, Before Midnight, 95, 2004, 2013, obviously in the movies, same people, Julie Delpy and Ethan Hawke are in it. Just fantastic movies. Sunset makes the list, though. I'll let you go again, Kirk. Linklater, you just said it. That's now two.
Yeah. Just a great trilogy. Great. It's funny with Ethan Hawke, like in the mid-90s, late 90s, he wrote that book, The Hutt Estate. He's in these, I'm like, this guy's just a pretentious like asshole. I've never done the 180 and anybody like Ethan Hawke is like an actor. Now like he's like maybe my favorite actor of the. He might be my MVP of the century. Like anytime he's in something, he's great. He's great, and the two of them are great together. The ending is unbelievable, and it basically leads.
You're gonna miss that plane, baby.
Basically leads into what is essentially a horror film, years later, which is just incredible piece of filmmaking. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's my favorite favorite of the trilogy. It's just unbelievable.
You have it high, 19, top 20 for you.
Yeah, no, I think it's incredible. Like, I think it's just so well written. It's the happiest of the trilogy, if we're being honest. Maybe not the it's the happiest. The ending is the best.
Yeah, leaves on the happiest.
You have. Yeah. Yes. That is the best you feel, I think, the entire trilogy is at the very end. And I think their chemistry is just fantastic. It feels so real. And that's true of every movie, but, man, they just feel like such real people.
This is one of those that, like, I'd kind of recommend to anyone, especially if you're getting into movies that maybe, like, if you're someone who's getting into movies that isn't more than just, like, a mainstream person, right? Like, the blockbusters and the big stuff, you don't see a ton. Like, this is a trilogy that I always suggest people. It's like, give this a try. Something a little different, maybe a little smaller, from a great director, different eras, right? You get it from three different decades. Like, I always suggest the Before trilogy. Just fantastic movies. Really, the Before, really close on all my 75. We'll see what else maybe could be on the list here from this trilogy. But yeah, Linklater, back to back. First one to appear twice on the list until 43. The 43rd best movie of the 21st century, according to our rankings, is on Kirk and Kenjack's list. Kirk has it at 17, Kenjack at 32. 2000's Memento by Christopher Nolan was not on my list. Another one really close. I kind of thought it might be on Gooch's list. Was not on Gooch's, was not on Clemmer's. But Kenjack, Memento at 32 for you.
Yeah, I think this was like among the Nolan ones, especially like these early years, like a very cool experiment that I think was very, like, I can't imagine many other directors that could successfully pull it off. And Nolan did, and I think Guy Pearce like really carries it. Great performance, and it's very like, I don't even want to say polarizing is maybe the wrong word. Like, I would never almost even recommend it to a lot of people because the people I have recommended to, like, sometimes they hate it and they're like, I don't get it. What did you make me watch? But the people, like, I think it's almost like the cilantro thing or whatever, right? Like, some people it's so, but to me, I'm like, this is delicious. I love this. I think it's complicated, interesting, really well shot, and I just enjoyed it quite a bit.
Kirk, 17, top 20 for you.
Yeah, saw it in the theater in 2000 when it came out, and was kind of had some idea was going, but was absolutely blown away. And I've been with Nolan like ever since. Unfortunately, he made Interstellar, but other than that, he's made great films. And I think the Rewatchables did L.A. Confidential a week or two ago, and they were talking about Guy Pearce and kind of where it went wrong, and you know, you'd think you would be off there. I mean, just a great lead performance. Joey Pants is running around and Carrie Ann Moss. Like, it's in at the time in the theater, I hadn't seen anything like this, not really. And it was sort of still that era of independent movies, the post Pulp Fiction run where you could see a movie and the movie was part of the conversation. Kind of, I think it did pretty well, Clemmer. I mean, I'm not saying it made 100 million, but it was definitely a movie that made an impact when it came out, like, definitely. And then Nolan was off to the races, you know?
So this is a just miss for me. It's a great, great pick. I had it, I saw this on DVD. So
yeah,
like getting passed
huge
around
on
my
DVD.
Dorm.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it got like a huge word of mouth around my dorm. Like, have you seen this? Have you seen this? And then, like you said, Kirk, everyone was talking about it in my college. Like, oh my gosh, like this Memento like breaks your brain. Fantastic movie. And Guy Pearce, he's a guy that could have been on our list from last week. Like, disappointing careers.
Yeah.
Because he's such a good actor. I feel like there should have been more there.
Yeah,
he was so good last year. And
he got nominated for Brutalist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was really good in that too. Fantastic. Such a good actor.
42. Two left on our first 10 of the best movies of the 21st century so far. One that I kind of hope been a little higher just based on being more people's lists. It's only on three lists. This is a top tenner for Kirk. 34 for me, 21 for Gooch, and that is Alexander Payne's 2004 movie Sideways. I know. I'm bummed.
Clemmer,
that's partly on me. I had it at 34.
Clemmer, you don't have
Sideways?
Any?
No.
I was surprised, Clemmer, you didn't have it, Clemmer, actually. I felt like Sideways is something you would like.
Oh, I love it. I've watched it 10 million times. It will be a niche category one day. I mean, Sideways, my buddy Jim and I went and did like the Sideways tour, played golf on that course. I don't even drink anymore. We walked around. We just checked it out. It was Thomas Hayden Church. Now, originally, Clooney wanted that role, and Payne said to him, like, no, you're too famous. Like, and he was exactly right. Giamatti's incredible. I mean, I could quote this movie all day. I love it, love it, love it. Million Dollar Baby, that slop, beat it for Best Picture. Stupid slop of Eastwood feeding her at the end. It made me puke. But Sideways is great, 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 great. Thomas Hayden Church, Giamatti and Church have great chemistry. Virginia Madsen, great. Sandra Oh, fantastic. Just highest recommend.
Just so fucking well written, and just so I've seen it a billion times as well, and the acting is superb, and it's just one of those like it's just a lived in movie, and you just I don't know, it's one of those ones where you just feel like you're just kind of there with them. You're on that trip, you know. It's like it's just so personal, and I love it. I kind of fucked it up too. I have a 34. I'm saying I wish it was higher. It's partly on me, but I'm glad it's on the list though.
To be fair, I saw it when it came out, so I was like in my mid-20s. I haven't seen it since. It might be a movie where I visit it now.
I think you'd love it if you watched it.
I might appreciate it.
Yeah. Every watching forever, either.
All of his movies age really well. Pains do. Mm-hmm. There's just a really like timeless quality to all of them. Also, Kirk, is that you would know this since you're the expert? Mm-hmm. Did Payne meet Sandra Oh on that shoot?
I think probably, they already... right? I think that was there. Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay, that's fun.
Yeah.
And then number 41 to round out our first 10 movies on our top 50 movies of the 21st century, we have kind of a repeat, but not really, but it is Taylor Sheridan again. It is the 2015's Sicario, directed by Denis Villeneuve, who I assume, again, no spoilers, probably not his last time on this list. I have it at 36, Kenjack 19, Gooch 56. Kenjack, you've always been very high on Sicario.
Yeah, I love Sicario. I think it's a brilliant movie. It's like a collection of so many great things that I think are working particularly well. Obviously, Sheridan, fantastic neo-Western screenwriter. Denny, one of the best filmmakers in the world. Deakins, one of the best cinematographers in the world. Supporting cast of like all these actors that I think are fantastic. Benicio, I think, is on another planet in the movie. He's so good. And like Daniel Kaluuya, like Brolin, obviously incredible. So many small like little nuances in that movie that I think make it tick. I love, there's so many great lines too, like when they're on the plane and she's like, he's like, you're asking me how a watch works, but for now it's just focused on the time. Like there's so many, I love Sicario, love the ending, love the dinner scene, I think, with Benicio, I think is one of my favorite scenes of the 21st century. I think it's so good. I'm a big Sicario fan.
Yep. Tense fucking movie. Brutal at times. Easily the most brutal of his three from that run from Sheridan. And also, this is that example of where Sheridan kind of, you know, fell off. He directed the second one, right? Sicario, Day of the Soldado.
Don't think he directed it. I think he wrote it, but then some other dude, the dude that wrote 000, I think, directed
okay.
it.
But point being that you remove Denis Villeneuve and you remove Roger Deakins from something, and then you're probably not going to have the sum of the parts being quite as good the second time around. but Sicario is fucking incredible. Fantastic movie. Top 50 for me, 36, 19 for Kenjack, 56 for Gooch. So that rounds out our first 10. I'll go down the list again. Number 50. So the top 50 movies of the 21st century so far. 50, Interstellar. 49, Wind River. 48, Road to Perdition.
Yeah!
47, The Big Short. 46, Memories of Murder. 45, Boyhood. 44, Before Sunset. 43, Memento. 42, Sideways. 41, Sicario. It only ramps up next week as we'll do 40 through 31.
The big takeaway is definitely going to be you guys have fucking Interstellar 50. That is going to be the takeaway that we.
Oh, people are going to be so pissed. Yeah. People are going to be so. It might have been better to have it not on the list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. People ignore a Clemmer's movie. I think they just won't pretend it doesn't exist. But Interstellar, I think, will be the big thing.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Sideways is really.
I'll say more than
one person put on the list, Clemmer.
You're the only person whose number one movie didn't land in the top 10. I will say that. So he's a Hanks head. Nobody's a bigger Hanks head than Chris
Hanks.
Clemmer.
He does.
Yeah.
He does.
Chris, if Chris Clemmer had to choose between Tom Hanks and Brendan Sklenar, he would
choose. Oh, no, don't do that. No, that's Hanks. Literal Hanks Sophie's choice.
At that point, I love Sklenar.
Clemmer has a terminal number six. He loves it. Loves it.
So Clemmer, I will go make this note on Clemmer. This is my fault. I'm not blaming Clemmer on this. I asked for updated lists because the last time we had these lists, it was like I didn't know if people maybe thought, you know, One Battle, Sinners, like Marty Supreme. Clemmer, I didn't specify that don't include movies from 2026. And so Clemmer did send some. And Clemmer would have had Project Hail Mary very, very high.
How high?
I think I had like 21 or something. Yeah.
You gave it a 97 out of 100. Only 21?
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
You have 20 movies?
I don't give hundreds out very often.
Is Road 100?
It has to be.
Yes.
Yeah, it has to be.
There's a few hundreds on here. Not many.
Okay.
How many hundreds do you give out, Gooch? You don't give out many of them.
You're so sensitive.
I got a few. I got a bunch.
Jesus Christ. I'm not sensitive. I'm asking questions, Kirk. I'm asking.
How many hundreds do you give out?
That's a good question.
How many hundreds? Is it?
How many hundreds? Yeah, it's a good question. How many hundreds have you given out?
I just know your scoring system. I know you are pretty. You're punitive.
Yeah. That's fair.
I think my all time now, I have 17, I think.
Oh, so that's even less than I have. I think I have like 35 or something.
Yeah, Empire.
I think I got like 30
Strikes
on
Back,
this list.
Seven Samurai, Lawrence of Arabia, 12 Angry Men, All the President's Men, Social Network, Goodfellas, Jaws, Godfather, Back to the Future,
Castaway,
Oppenheimer, Return of the King, Blade Runner 2049, Fury Road, Singing in the Rain, Toy Story, Inglourious Bastards, and Willy Wonka. Which Willy Wonka, I will note, you have to remember, Willy Wonka, I don't count the mom singing scene.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm biased. Like, I'll use an example. It'd almost be like if we had coworkers who maybe excuse things that Tiger Woods does. That's what I do. I excuse away the
Cheer
mom singing
Charlie.
In Willy Wonka. It doesn't exist in my eyes. It never happened.
Gene Wilder just got off the phone with the president.
That's what Willie made chocolate to feel normal. All right, that's it. We will be back next week. We'll continue this the next couple weeks. I'm very excited because it gets, as we go, obviously people start to have, you know, we have more and more crossover and kind of the numbers get a little crazy. So we'll see what lands up at number one. But next week we will continue on with the list for the next 10. That is it. Thank you as always for watching. Thank you for bearing with my voice got a little better throughout. Next week we have, what was it? It was the Jonah Hill movie, Apple TV, and then the pasta sauce love story bullshit.
Yep.
That is it. Thank you for watching. For Kirk, Ken Jack, Clemmer, Gooch, I'm Jeff DeLo. We'll talk to you next time.
Stella Blue Coffee ready-to-drink can lattes are officially available nationwide at Target. That's right. Whether you're making a Target run for toothpaste, paper towels, or somehow spending $200 on things you didn't know you needed, stop by the coffee section and see why everyone is turning to Stella Blue. The cans are made with 100% Colombian coffee, real dairy, real sugar, and contain 190 milligrams of caffeine. They've got dessert-level flavor with coffee-level function. You can choose from espresso, sweet cream, or espresso cafe mocha. And once you try them, you'll understand why they're the best canned lattes out there. Here's the best part. 100% of proceeds will go toward our We Brew to Rescue mission, in which we're funding the adoption of 1,000 pets across the country. Grab a Stella Blue at Target, taste the difference, and make a difference. Stella Blue Coffee.